All right, guys. So for everyone that's listening, we are introducing Mark. I call him Mark, Sergeant Rodriguez. He was a mentor. Well, he still is a mentor for me when it comes to stocks. He's taught me so much about the stock market, how things go, and just planning out my future. No further ado, I'd like to have, Sergeant Rod, introduce yourself. Just tell us about yourself, where you come from, how you got started in the stock market, and just a little quick bio.
Okay, so you can call me Marcos because the Army's done pretty much here in a little less than a year. I just submitted my packet last week, so it's in progress. But my name is Marcos. I'm 37 years old. I'm Puerto Rican. My parents are Puerto Rican. I was born in Germany. I've been in the Army for about 19 years. That's nine active, and the rest are in the reserves. I'm a sergeant in the United States Army Reserve Aviation Branch. So I'm an aviation operations sergeant. And I'm also a civil servant. So I picked up a gig, a full-time gig with the Department of the Army as an aircraft dispatcher, which is basically in aviation operations, but on the civilian side. So I've been doing that for about 6 years now. I'm third generation military. My father served and his father served. And the way that I got started in the stock market was really when I was 18 years old. That's when I joined the Army. I didn't know a lot about the stock market then. I just knew about the TSP. And right. I was just doing what I was told because I was young. I was like, man, I don't know. What is this? It's like, you don't know what it is, but just listen to me, soldier. Go ahead and invest. Turn on 5%. Forget about it. And that's what I did. I just turned it on and I forgot about it. I didn't even thought about it. And towards the crash of 2008, when the housing market crashed and a whole bunch of other things was happening, a different sergeant in Korea was like, hey, are you doing TSP? And I was like, yeah, I think I remember hearing about that, back when I started my career, I had it going. It's like, where's your money sitting at when it comes to the TSP? I didn't know. I was like, I don't know. So he helped me, requested my login and my user, and we checked it out. He was like, you got your money in your G fund. You got to do something about that. I was like, I don't even know what that is, but okay. So based on that, he helped me out and he moved all my money from G fund when the market was pretty darn low. He shoved it all into the C fund. Again, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm trusting my NCO that he's helping me out. He's right. Looking out for my well-being. And we did that. And then towards 2010, I was in Fort Hood. I RCP'd and I forgot about my TSP altogether. And when I joined the civil service, I started learning a little more about investing in the stock market and I started picking up books and stuff like that. Then it hit me. I was like, I got a TSP with the Army. I should check it out. That thing had tenfold. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. It had tenfold. Wow. And I'm sitting here with remembering that there was only maybe $25,000. And it tenfold to about almost $200,000. So I was like, oof, what am I going to do with this?
Whoa.
Money management skills. Yeah. So I just left it alone. I was like, I'm just going to leave this alone until I can really try to get, all my ducks in a row and understand what am I going to do with all this? Because if I touch it, then it can ruin, my future. Right, so I just left it alone.
Wow. Damn, I didn't know that about you with the
TSP. I did tell you about that. I'll tell you the TSP was just rolling. I was like,
and when they came out with the blended retirement aspect too, with matching that additional 5%, like people are sitting on a gold mine, and people when you join, people don't really realize like the crazy benefits that you get. Even while you're in, everybody thinks that, oh, you're just working toward a retirement, or oh, you're working toward a medical retirement or something like that. And the TSP is just a godsend. Like if you just want to just consider your TSP a savings more so than like an investing, you get 5%, they match 5%. So I'm interested. So once you got that 150, like, or 200, have you used that? Has that been rolled into dividends, or like, you know, or are you still sitting on the TSP?
That's still sitting in the TSP. What I did is, because that TSP was sitting in an active duty TSP account, I took that TSP and I was able to roll it over to my civilian TSP account. But that's a one-time deal. So once I do that, gotcha. It's done. And then I started my reserve TSP. And a lot of people, because I qualify under the legacy retirement system on the Army, but I actually waived that. I opted out. And a lot of the old dudes were like, why are you doing that? Why did you do that? You get 60% in retirement. It's like, yeah, but I'm getting 5% match. That's extra money that I'm getting, and I'm tossing it on Roth, and their 5% match is traditional. So whether I have to pay taxes now or later, I'm still going to be making more money by them putting them into my account. Whereas my retirement, my 60% retirement is just set, and it's based off my base pay minus, you know, a 60% from where I was. So I was like, no, I'm just going to go ahead and continue growing my TSP for as long as I'm in. And so a lot of people underestimate it.
Yeah. And that's if you make it to retirement. I mean, God forbid, you know, brand new Private Joe comes out of AIT and runs you over with a Humvee. You know, you might get a medical retirement, hopefully, but your leg is gone, and you know, you thought you were going to do this great Army career for 20 years, and that doesn't happen. But that 5% will still be rolling regardless if you have a leg or not. So
absolutely.
So dividends, like what made you, you know, what got you into dividends, and then, you know, why dividends in comparison into other trading? I don't even know if you trade any other, I don't know if you do options or Forex or anything like that, but what is it about dividends that stands out to you?
Yeah, I got a good answer for that. So for the stock market in general, it's not just the dividends that I'm doing. Dividends is just one of many things that I do in order to diversify, you know, my strategy. Because in order to develop a strategy, you just got to sit down and figure out, all right, how am I going to approach this? What are the tax implications of what I'm doing? How much money am I generating from this style, which is day trading? What are my implications on short-term capital gains? Swing trading is the same thing. Short-term capital gains, you pay taxes on that too, and it's an increase percentage in tax. Whereas dividends, if you buy dividend stocks, really good quality dividend stock, blue chip, you know, dividend stocks, and you hold them for 60 days or more, 90 days or more, there's actually a reduced tax implication if you decide to sell that stock. So for dividends itself, I prefer not to sell them at all. And the reason why is because the dividends, while providing a reduced tax implication, I can actually use the dividends as a supplemental income to supplement my deposits towards investing. So every month I have a religious amount that I invest. It's about $1,000 to $2,000 depending on my household needs. Right. So whatever's left, I take the $2,000, wait for the dividend payout, put it together, and I shove it into a different dividend paying stock that I trust, and I just build my portfolio like that. And I'm trying to get it to a point where it's making me an X amount consistently every month. That way I can start supplementing my ETFs. So the real goal really is to take my whole dividend portfolio, which is composed about 9 stocks, take that money along with my deposits and start filling my ETFs for a good 10 years.
Yeah. Damn. So you do day trading as well too, correct?
Yes, but I'm very careful with that. A good example for a good day trade that happened just last week, Roblox. Roblox was brought into the stock market. I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday. I had no idea. I just saw the IPO on Webull and I was like, I got to look into Roblox because I think I've heard about it. Turns out it's a video game, and now it's a video game company. So I was like, all right, I got this much percentage of money that I'm willing to risk on something that I barely know on hype. So I put about a little under $3,000. It offered the price at 45. When it opened, it was valued at 65. So I put my limit buy at 60. when it opened 65, a lot of people sold immediately. It shot down to like 1650. So my limit executed. If it would have not executed, I didn't care. It was just a shot. And it went to 70. I sold before the market closed. And then I find out that ARK Investment, I don't know if you've heard of Kathy Wood. Yep. She bought 500,000 shares of Roblox. So I took my profits from Roblox and I shoved it into ARK Investment because that's an ETF that I am trying to beef up too.
Gotcha. Can you explain ETFs for people that, you know, really don't know, because they just hear stocks and then ETFs and they may think that they're the same thing. So.
Absolutely. So an ETF is an exchange traded fund. It's basically a portfolio of hundreds of companies. It can be from a few companies to hundreds. There's some out there that have over 300 companies plus, and they basically track and follow the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ or the Dow. Right. So you have less risk of losing your money if you put it into an ETF, because even though one of the 300 companies goes broke, there's still 299 companies that are backing your investment. So even if they go broke, whoever's managing that portfolio on their end, that ETF, they're going to make a smart decision for you. They're going to sell their positions on the company that's going bankrupt, and they're going to allocate it somewhere else on a company that's still, you know, moving tread fast and succeeding.
Like Roblox.
Make sure that they protect your assets. Now for ETFs, there is some fees. It's maintenance fees that they charge at the end of the year, but they're very minimal. You can find out what kind of fees they have through like trading platforms or on Google. You can pull them up and it'll let you know what their maintenance cost is for that ETF. I follow five of them. Where's my phone? So my top five that I follow and I like to invest in are VOO, which is the Vanguard S&P 500 ETF. I got Noble, which is my ProShares S&P 500 Dividend Aristocrats. That's basically all the companies that have been paying dividends consistently for over 25 years and more. So 25 years and more, consistent dividend payouts, businesses that already been established in our country and out for a long time. These are companies that you really want to invest in for, you know, a less risk. I got VTI, which is the Vanguard Total Stock Market ETF. It's similar to the S&P 500, but Vanguard has a lower maintenance fee on it. I think it's like 0.04% per year, which is very minimal. I got the ARK Investment. It's this one specifically, it's much higher on the risk scale. And the reason why is because this ETF is focused solely on technology, electric vehicles, renewable energy. So this right here is like the hottest one to have right now, based on what's going on in our country with Biden coming out with the new Green Deal and all this stuff. This has a lot of potential. So I'm putting a few eggs into this basket, and I'm hoping that in about 5 years, we see some growth on it. And yeah, I think that's about it. No, I got one more. DGRO. This is an iShares Core Dividend Growth ETF. So if you've noticed, I got about three of my ETFs that are dividend related.
Mm-hmm.
But the main goal about having dividend paying ETFs is because my last step in my plan is really to take all of my liquid income that I have in my stocks. And once I'm set with the amount of money that I want to have, I'm going to take all that money and shove it into all these dividend paying ETFs. The reason I do that is because now that I've built my capita for this plan, I'm just going to let the dividends roll every quarter. And at the end of each year, I'm going to take and withdraw 4% of all of those ETFs and then reinvest the dividends throughout the year. So that 4% of my whole capital is basically going to help me sustain my living expenses throughout the year.
Gotcha.
Is that the FIRE?
It's similar to that. So I'm trying to follow a movement. It's called the FI movement or the FIRE movement, which stands for financial independence or financial independence retire early. which basically what you need to do is you need to make sure that you figure out what is your FIRE number, which basically means how much money can you survive on 1 year. So for example, my wife and I have a net income of about $75,000 a year. This is after taxes. So if we're living well now with net income after taxes, then our FIRE number would be 75,000 times 25, which equals about $1,850,000. The reason why that number is so high is because once I achieve that goal, which is, it's not very hard to achieve with the market growing 5 to 10% every year, hoping that there's not another crash. I'll talk about how you can protect yourself from that happening and putting you in jeopardy or your investment in jeopardy. But when you multiply it by 25, that means that it's supposed to sustain you for about 25 or more years.
Right.
If you do a 4% withdrawal on your FIRE number when you've achieved it, you're taking out 75,000, but given on the estimated growth of the market over time, you should be able to make that $75,000 back before the year ends and a little more. Now, let's put a scenario. The market decides to crash. The largest market crash happened back in the 1940s, I believe, and it lasted 3 years. The market was down 3 years. So if you take the actual market, you pull it up on Google and you just pull the historical, just look at the largest depression that there was in the stock market. You need to ensure that in order to protect yourself from withdrawing it from your accounts, when these periods are happening, build a emergency fund. So basically, before you decide to retire, make sure that you're doing the 4% withdrawal rule while working, and take that 4% and shove it in a high yield savings account for 3 whole years.
Great gem.
That should give you, what's up?
Oh my gosh,
you just, that should give you $75,000 times 3. You want to do that so that you can live off your emergency savings expenses while the market recovers. Now, given that the market crashed, the longest one was 3 years, everything else I've seen has been less than 2 years, 1 year. Like the coronavirus crash, that recovered in like 6-7 months. That was pretty incredible. Mm-hmm. But that's an incredible recovery rate.
So with crises like those, like, you know, pandemics and stuff like that, how should investors or people who are starting off, like, when should start a new investor should start? Like, you think the prime time to start investing is during a pandemic, or should they just wait to the next pandemic?
Start now. Don't start waiting for an opportunity. Nobody can predict the market. Start now. Don't be afraid. Put some money in. Don't put all your money in. Put what you can afford to lose. That's what you need to understand. When you're going to the stock market, make sure that the money you're allocating in there is after you've covered every single expense to live off of, and that everything's good on your life. Make sure that you have an emergency savings in place of about 6 months, 3 months minimum. You guys are active duty, so your emergency fund should be about 3 months just to keep you afloat.
Right.
If you own a home, it should be 6 months to a year. That's what I suggest, because you never know what's going to happen. You're going to need maintenance in a home. A good example is my HVAC gave out this year.
Yep.
It gave out this year twice.
My heater went out. Yep.
And winter. And the dude came out and he was like, yeah, we're going to have to replace this. It's going to be about $14,000 for your size home. I'm like, no. Patch that sucker up, keep it rolling, because I got plans with my money.
I'm telling you. It's not. I'm telling you.
Damn.
Hey, man, I'm over here taking some serious notes, Marcos. Like, you know, and that's the reason we brought you on, man. Honestly, like, just listening to you talk, we're so quiet because we don't want to stop your train of thought, right? You are dropping multiple gems. You went over, like, your portfolio, right, with your ETFs. You talked about the dividends, but you're on here and we brought you on here for dividends. But honestly, like, we're learning a lot more than just about dividends today. You talked about historical analysis, right? So we're not just going off the hype of what's going on now. You went back and you looked back at the previous market crashes, and the longest one was 3 years. So therefore, you should predict for a market crash at a max of 3 years, and then have that money allocated to last you, to, you know, pay your mortgage or
just to protect you. Yeah.
Protect yourself.
Just be very savvy with it. Just go into survival mode and try to waste the least money as possible throughout the year.
Man, I definitely got to, I'm going to have to link with you. I'm going to get your contact after this. Like, I got some questions. Yeah. Like, and I don't want to take up the entire podcast.
Yeah, I got you.
Because we could sit here and talk all day for hours. Yeah. It's like, hey, yeah, man, yeah. So break that down one more time. I would say, I think Paulie, what was the next thing we wanted to talk about after his, you know, kind of what he's working on now?
Basically right now. So what, I don't know if he asked, no, he did not answer that. What are you currently working on like now? And then what type of other investments do you do besides the stock market?
So I already talked to you about this, but for the audience, just like some of you guys picked up, real estate. So I bought a duplex about 6 months ago and I got that rolling too. Now, the thing with it is that unfortunately I couldn't use my VA home loan on it because the stipulations on it is I have to live in the dwelling
right, for
at least a year. Well, I got a home and I love this home and it's under VA. So I decided to do 20% down on a regular bank loan and I went ahead and rented both out.
Nice.
Now, it's what I did is I took some money out of my USAA index fund just to provide that 20% and then 20% of that 20% to be the cushion for any kind of maintenance that house needs later on down the line. So that investment's protected. It's a matter of just being consistent. We're working here on the actual home market growth, not what it's valued now. So I'll just let it roll and I'll forget about it.
And I mean, honestly, it is a sitting investment, honestly. Like, let's say that it, you know, over the next 10 years, you pay off theoretically $50,000 to $100,000 of the primary. Mm-hmm. And then you could take, in a scenario where there was just everything is wiped out, no, like, really bad, shitty situation, you can take a line of credit against that home, right? That is a sitting savings account. That is a sitting investment. That is a sitting cash flow, yeah, right?
That's correct.
That's wild, man. So that's pretty dope that you even had the capital to, you know, go ahead and do a conventional loan. Cause that's the big problem with younger investors is,
yep,
capital.
And it's scary. It's scary. Cause it's like, man, I've saved all this money. Do I really want to let this go? No, don't get yourself on that mindset. Just put yourself in a situation where it's like, this is an asset. Whereas if you buy a car, that's a liability.
A moving liability.
Now you can make a moving liability an asset.
Right.
You're smart. You just turn, go do DoorDash, go do Instacart, go do Uber Eats, write off all the mileage that you accumulate while you're doing these things, write off the gas, write off the oil, change the maintenance. At the end of the year, that liability is going to get you some tax incentives and you can buy a better car later on.
Right.
Yep.
But at least you're not turning your liability into a worse liability. You're actually benefiting from it.
Right. That's, and you just dropping straight gems because it is true. Especially if, and with you, you're doing like, you know, stock market and also real estate too. So that's best of both worlds, honestly.
The cart.
Yeah. another question too is, so what was your biggest success and what was your biggest failure throughout your whole investment journey? Either it can be in real estate or in the stock market. Just what was your biggest success and biggest failure?
Well, you know what my biggest failure was, because we were in Iraq when this happened. If you're not willing to lose money on penny stocks or don't know what you're doing, stay away from them. I put $3,000 on a stock named Taronis Technologies. It was supposed to be like an energy regeneration company, but they were doing pretty bad. I put my money there and within a week they were doing a stock split. I didn't know what that was. They did a reverse split on my shares, which basically gave me more shares for what I really had. It was a 2-for-1, I believe, or 1-for-2. Mm-hmm. It reduced the cost of my shares, which basically is supposed to really be the same value. They're going to get, if it's like one share at $1, they split it as 50 cents a share, but it didn't really do very well. Cause when they did that split, it shot up in price based on all the hype and people buying it, but then it kind of adjusted back down. And it never really recovered. So I sold that position and I was in the hole, $3,000. That took me that took me a whole year to bounce out of, because I was like, man, what do I have to do now in order to recover from this? And when it was really just sitting down and doing research and understanding that if you don't know what you're doing, don't get in it. Yeah. Do paper trading, practice, just put very small amounts of money if you want to learn the stock market, but don't throw all your money in there if you don't know what you're doing, because you're going to lose it.
And that's great news. Oh, that's a great tip, because, you know, a lot of people do things blindly, or, you know, I would suggest you find someone who's a mentor, right? But even your mentor can make mistakes too. Like, it doesn't have to, he's not the guru and know it all, but like, a lot of people, because of 2020 and the pandemic, a lot of younger investors started getting involved with the stock market and blindly throwing their money. And I noticed that you said that you lost $3,000 and you were pretty distraught about that. But most people would just say, oh, well, you're still making a paycheck. But I'm pretty sure in your mindset, it's like, no, that $3,000 is for the purpose of, sorry, I got a 10 minute warning here, but was for the purpose of being invested in the stock market. I'm going to use my personal capital to recover from that loss. And that's how people should think. You know, you're not using your other assets to recover from that loss that you experienced.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. And the good thing that I got out of all of this is really I'm able to take these failures and share it with you guys. That way you guys can become better investors, because you guys are the future. I'm the one that's kind of fading in the back here pretty soon. But if I'm able to share this with you guys and you guys can actually, you know, feed from this, you'll be better investors and you'll have a better position in life to where you can provide for yourself and your family. And that's what matters, man. Taking care of your family, being wealthy. Being financially wealthy.
So speaking of family, so how do you balance, like, how do you balance, you know, your life with your wife and like with work and also doing, you know, the trading and investing side? Are you able to?
It's pretty straightforward. I mean, my wife works too. She works in the city. So she's gone in the mornings. By the time I get up, I'm already doing pre-market stuff. So at 4 a.m, the stock market opens up pre-market. So I'll get up at 4 a.m, set up my system, and I'll try to find the stocks that I want to day trade or swing trade based on the screeners. You remember screeners. I hooked you up with that. I'll set my stuff up and I'll go back to bed, and around 8:30-ish, I'll get right back up, make sure that my plays are going to, you know, execute the right way. And if they don't, I'll go ahead and cancel and just wait on whatever the actual market's going to do within the first hour or so.
All right. Yeah. Also, so now we're kind of getting into like near the end of the podcast and the interview. So with the listeners that are listening, what are three things that you would try to implement or like give advice to for someone that's wanting to start investing, or maybe wants to change up their, whatever they got going on that's not working. So whatever advice you would give.
I got you. Well, I mentioned it before, three things. Number one, set up an emergency savings account. Because if an emergency shows up and you start investing, you don't want to find yourself cashing out your investments and losing on growth. So emergency savings in place. Make sure that all your debt is clear, pay off your cars, pay off anything that you got, credit cards, your phones, clear the way so that you can have all of your income so that you can attack your investments and be financially successful on that growth. And third, be disciplined, do research, get on YouTube, look around, read books, do anything that you have to do to enrich that knowledge of yours so that you can better execute your growth.
Yeah, straight gems right there for y'all. So I know you said that you got into real estate and you got into the stock market. How did you learn all these stuff? Like, what type of books did you read, or what type of, did you watch any YouTube videos, or did you have a mentor yourself to help you, you know, go through this crazy road of the investing?
So I didn't have mentors. A lot of these things I had to learn on my own, and I just started researching. I just took the initiative, YouTube, Google. There's a lot of books that I've read, but three books that I would recommend for people starting is really Dave Ramsey, Total Money Makeover. Read that book first. It'll help you understand what you're doing wrong with your money to get you on track so that you can find out what you need to do right to move in the right direction for investments. Book number two, I'd recommend Everyday Millionaires from Chris Hogan. He's also in the Ramsey Network. This book has 27 people that are sharing their stories. They're ordinary people, just like you and me, that became wealthy investors and are living life. So their stories and their strategies are in this book. And let me see, book number three.
Do you have any Instagram? Like, so if you don't have another book, but do you have like somebody that on Instagram that you follow? Like, yeah, this guy's hot. He's always spitting out some information, or maybe even YouTube that somebody you're subscribed to, like, you know, that you kind of like watch daily, or, you know, that helps you.
YouTube Minority Mindset, Andre Jenk, he's really good. He hits you with the truth. Some things might hurt, but if it hurts, that means it's true. So check him out. I follow Graham Stephan. Graham Stephan's good. And what's his name? There was another dude. I don't remember immediately off the top of my head, but I do a lot of YouTube. Everything that I find is on YouTube. So I'm sorry, I'm losing my train of thought there.
Good. Wow, I don't even know how long it's been. It's been like, what, 45 minutes? And you just, honestly, like, this is just incredible. Like, I wish there was more time, because this can actually go on throughout the whole day talking about this. But where can people find you to either follow you to see your journey of success, or if you even have a social media where people can like contact you and just, you know, give words of advice or ask for advice? Or
unfortunately, I'm pretty old school, so I never really got into the whole Instagram.
It's all good, man.
And I don't have a follower, a crowd. I don't. Maybe I should consider it. I'll get with you guys and see if I can figure something out. But at this moment, I wasn't really even thinking about it. So yeah,
that's fine. You know, the people that are listening to this podcast, and you know, obviously, we're starting off very new ourselves, Scale Up Squad. You know, we look, this is what we're doing. We're trying to give people an opportunity, a place to go to learn from other people. So, you know, a year from now, you know, we'll probably have a lot more followers, but they'll look back on this episode and they'll learn something. And even people who are listening now will learn something. So if you don't have any socials, it's okay. I'm just going to tell them, listen to the podcast. That's all you need to do.
Absolutely.
Yep. That's the thing too, is that we can show, you're showing the audience too, that, you know, you don't have to have a platform to be successful in life. You don't have to be having like a million followers on social media or anything like that. You can literally be just living your regular life, just knowing, but you're in your neighborhood, you're the top dog in that neighborhood because you're getting all this money coming in off your investments.
Mm-hmm.
And perfect. That's the best flex to have.
Honestly, yeah.
But I mean, it goes the other way too. We don't want to cut those people, because I'm learning from those that are doing what I'm not doing. So
right. That's
a great platform. It's just a matter of, can you do it? Do you have the time to do it?
So yeah, because it is a lot to manage.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we'll wrap it up. Thanks again, Marco, for stopping by, man. Hopefully we can have you on again, and maybe we could go like, you know, lesson number two and really go into the weeds. I don't have anything else. Paul, you got something?
No, I actually don't. Thank you. Again, thank you for, getting your time out and coming on to this podcast and, you know, just sharing your life, your journey going through the investment, through stock market and real estate and shit. Just keep it up. And I'm definitely keeping in touch with you, because you are definitely my mentor. I tell everyone that you are my mentor and I'm proud to say that. So definitely we'll always be in touch too.
And I'm proud of you, because you're making the good moves. You smart.
Oh, yeah.
But thank you very much for having me on your channel. And if you ever invite me, depending on the subject, hit me up, because I'm learning just like you guys. I might know a little bit about, you know, everything, but sometimes it's always good to do some research before I come here and I don't
absolutely
fool myself.